Welcome to the For the Church podcast, another great gospel-centered resource from Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. My name is Jared Wilson. I'm an assistant professor of pastoral ministry and author in residence at Midwestern Seminary. And I'm here as always with my friend and my colleague and my co-host. You know, a church member recently said I should add, what was the word? Companion. And I thought, no, it doesn't sound right.
That's a little too touchy-feely.
This is Ross Ferguson. How are you, brother?
I think we're both in the same boat, which is that neither of our voices are sounding particularly sultry today.
Well, yeah, I'm coming off 3 days, 4 days of a wicked chest cold that turned into a head cold, and you are coming back from...
I'm coming back from Minneapolis after screaming and supporting our Spurgeon Knights. That's the college of Midwestern Seminary, the Spurgeon Knights basketball team. We took some students up to support them in the national championship. And I'm not generally one to shout. I'm one to like wave, clap, that type of thing.
Okay.
But by the third game, all the guys that normally lead the chants were like their voices were gone, so it was kind of like who's gonna
yell leader.
So I became like the guy yelling, and there's what I've learned in this process is the guys that are in their early 20s yelling at basketball games, hey, they can recover really well.
They get those young vocal cords
when you're not in your 20s. Yeah. Your voice just disappears. And I mean, I've always had this after preaching, my voice gets a bit kind of wobbly and croaky. But yeah, after 3 days being away and screaming and stomping for the Spurgeon Knights,
yeah,
I returned to no voice.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that because I've got actually have it written down here. Ask Ross to talk about basketball. So some people probably don't even know. So number one, that we have a college here.
Yes.
So our undergrad is Spurgeon College.
Spurgeon College.
And if they do know, they may not know that we have athletics
yeah.
at Spurgeon College, yeah. including basketball team, yeah. men's basketball team, which went to the
national championship. So, yeah, we've got a growing athletics department here, basketball, volleyball, cross country.
They just added cross country.
Yeah. Soccer teams. I think there's plans for more teams. But, yeah, the basketball team led by Billy Livesey, Coach Billy Livesey. This year had an incredible run. I think they won a total of 20 games. I think it was total 20 games. We only lost at home when we got to the regional tournament. We didn't lose a single home game through the season. The best season that Spurgeon College have ever had.
Yeah.
Went to the national championship and took third place at the national championship. So first national championship and took third place in the first appearance. So
that's pretty dandy.
Yeah.
Well, and we had one of the players, Jude Warren, right? Yep. Did he win like player of the week numerous weeks?
So he won player. We actually had several awards through the season, and Jude actually made the All-American team, and we had multiple kind of scholar athletes of the week.
Yeah.
You name it, Spurgeon College, we basically had the season that you all dream of in the sense of
yeah.
awards, accolades, even just attendance at games. You know, rewind 2 years ago, attendance at games were maybe 30, 40 people. I think the last regular season game had over 300 people there. You know, this sounds like a pitch. If you want to come to college, come to Spurgeon yeah. College. But yeah, as a family, we had this wonderful opportunity to drive a bus of students up to Minneapolis to support our team. And yeah, we had a great time. I felt completely out of my depth. Like,
were you into basketball at all before you came to the States?
Basketball is not really a thing in the UK. There is basketball. Yeah, there's Glasgow Rocks as a basketball team, and we went to a game there. But it's not really a sport. It's kind of maybe fifth or sixth down, maybe even lower down in terms of what would be viewed. But when we came here, we just decided to kind of culturally engage. You know, if the college has sports, we're going to turn up and we're going to be supporting them. And at the start of this season, we promised Coach Billy that we would be at every single home game, that we would support as a family, you know, just to encourage other families to come. You know, it's really easy for families to go when they know other families are going.
Right, right.
So even just like the last regular season game, I looked down at one point, I counted 23 children in the stands near us. And I thought to myself, only three of these are mine. There's just a lot of children around here. And it's just because we as a family want to encourage people to support our basketball team. And they came through for us this year. But Minneapolis was really cool. I did like the most American thing.
Okay.
I went to the Mall of America.
Oh, wow. I've never been to the Mall of America.
Well, there you go.
This is the biggest mall in America.
It would surprise
America,
you,
right?
That it's basically a large mall.
But does that have like an amusement park?
Yeah, we went on the Ferris wheel inside Mall of America. We went to the City Mill Museum. We went on walks. We did coffee shops. One thing I've learned, and we talked about this in a podcast recently, when driving through Iowa, it is field, 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 Des Moines, field, 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 field. I was just like, something needs to happen.
There's a reason for that. There's a percentage of the world's food that somehow, I forgot, this is like the first time I was driving through field, 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 field of Iowa, and somebody was like, you know, like 1% of the global food comes from Iowa. It was something weird like that. So the wheat or the corn or something, it's pretty significant.
Yeah.
So that's why they need all those fields.
And that's the type of interesting fact that was shared with me when driving 6 hours.
Yeah. Well, I want to come back to the basketball.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a real Hoosiers kind of story, I think. What I want to know is, this is my competitive side showing, are there any of the other SBC seminaries have teams in this? It's the NCAA?
NCCAA. So it's basically the Christian Athlete League.
Okay. All right.
Yes, they do.
So it's the Christian movie version of athletics, is what you're saying.
Oh, I see what you're doing.
No. Really, I just want to know if there's other seminaries in there.
There are other. So like Boyce is there, but they are.
How'd they do?
They are not in the national championship, and they're not as good as us.
Yeah.
We actually, there's a colleague of mine that thinks we should
study in with their bow ties and things on.
Rather than we do the Six Nations rugby in the UK, we should do the six SBCs basketball team round robin type thing. Yeah. And I'll just tell you straight out, we would win that hand out. It'd be just so, like Spurgeon College through the season, this last season, were ranked number one in the nation. They're ranked number one in the league. We went in as the fourth seed for the national championship. We won third place. There was a slight interesting second game with lots of things happening in the interesting game, which we could have won and could have went all the way through to the final. But
there's some controversy.
But I think Spurgeon College, in terms of the SBC, very much has one of the leading basketball teams. And that's kind of hands down to Coach Billy. He's very much a disciple maker. And I really respect that actually this is less about basketball and more about producing young men that are disciples of Christ. So
excellent. Well, and as we all know from the movie selection I watched today, when you're a disciple of Christ, it makes you better at sports.
It does.
It's a grab bag episode. Normally, the grab bag feature isn't, you know, particularly old on the podcast. Well, but what we've done in the past, grab bag, essentially, we bring questions for each other that we don't know about. We each bring two questions for the other person to answer. And so it's a surprise. It's a surprise to our listeners. It's a surprise to us. But this time around, I thought we'd do something a little different. Somewhat of a surprise, but we kind of know coming in what we're doing. I thought we should do a movie swap. This won't be a regular feature. maybe we'll do another one in a year or so. But as part of the grab bag, let's do a movie swap. So what we did was, I thought, let's use the idea of Christian movies, because this keeps coming up.
Yep.
It's in every review almost. People just keep bringing up the Christian movies thing. And I thought, all right, Ross, give it your best shot. Give me the Christian movie I have to watch. And I'm going to give you the Christian movie that you have to watch, and we'll each watch the movie that we assign to each other, and we'll come in here and discuss them.
And to be clear, Jared and I going into this are in complete disagreement. So it's not like we're going to change our positions because we're in complete disagreement.
Yeah.
Well, there are, you got to admit, we did go to the theater once together to see a Christian movie.
And it was good.
And it was really good. So
that movie was Jesus Revolution,
by the way. Yep, exactly. We enjoyed that. This, I have a funny feeling, is going to be a repeat of a previous episode with a surprising twist.
Oh, okay.
And I will leave the surprising twist for now.
Okay, well, the first thing I want to ask you, so the movie that you asked me to watch
yes.
is called Overcomer.
Overcomer.
And it's from 2000, I should have written this
2019,
down.
I think it was.
Oh, I thought it was a little older than that. It's not old at all, but it is 2000s. Overcomer. I'm looking it up on IMDb. This is fantastic radio.
It's from the Kendrick brothers.
It is 2019. Oh, yeah. So it is more recent than...
Hey, okay. Jared, I know my Christian movie
you
information.
You apparently do. Yeah, I'm going to keep that page up because I have to reference anything else. Overcomer from 2019. This is from the Kendrick brothers mm-hmm. who have a series of Christian movies where they make...
I think it's their sixth film, maybe.
They've made multiple Christian movies. Directed by Alex Kendrick, also starring Alex Kendrick. And what about this movie? So the first thing I want to ask you, because you didn't really say,
yeah.
did you assign me Overcomer because you thought this is like the best or one of the best Christian movies? And if anything's going to convince me to change my mind, it would be this movie?
No.
Okay.
That's not kind of what
I was
thinking.
That's kind of a relief, to be honest with you.
So what I was thinking was, over the years, one of the biggest issues of Christian movies is budget. Like, they just haven't had the budget. They haven't had the quality of videography. They haven't had the sense of it even being filmed in HD or anything like that. So I feel like this is the one that's probably one of the latest and best quality in terms of having a budget and being able to push the limits a little bit on the quality side. I think they had a budget of something like $5 or $6 million for this movie and grossed something like $40 to $50 million or something, where the Kendrick brothers' early movies, the budget was very small and therefore it was like filmed on someone's phone or something.
Yeah, the estimated budget, I'm looking at the numbers on IMDb, estimated budget for this film was $5 million. It grossed worldwide $38 million.
Yeah.
So
that's a good
success,
investment.
A box office success for an independent film. I don't know if this was released in theaters as one of those Fathom events or if it was just a...
That was my main thought is that if you're going to watch any Christian movie, this is, outside of Jesus Revolution, this is going to be one that hopefully the
cinematography.
There you go. Yeah. Would be a better quality than other Christian movies. In terms of the story writing, it's the same as all Kendrick brothers' stories.
So. Well, let me start with the cinematography.
Okay.
Because the absolute best part of the whole movie to me was the very beginning before mm-hmm. anyone starts talking. It's a camera shot.
Yeah.
It looks like a drone or maybe a mm-hmm. Boom shot. Anyway, it's elevated and it comes in through a window.
Yeah.
I mean, that might have been a million of their budget there, just getting through this shot where the camera appears to go through a window. And let me tell you what it reminded me of, because the groundbreaking, the pioneering example of this type of camera work is actually Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho, mm-hmm. which was, in the 1950s. When that camera went in through the hotel room in the very beginning of the movie, no one had ever seen anything like that before. Mm. How did he do that?
Yep.
Now, for Hitchcock to do that with the kind of equipment they had, they didn't have computers putting things together, it was rather remarkable. When it happened at the very beginning, the opening shot, it actually stifled the laughter I was having because of the music. The music was like... Let me just talk about the score for a second. Really overwrought.
Uh-huh.
It was like Titanic or something. It was too emotional at the times it didn't need to be. Yep. It felt like in the beginning, it's panning in and it's coming into a basketball game is the opening scene. So this opening camera shot, I was like, oh, that's pretty impressive. But the music playing is like, oh, it's like something life or death happening. Yeah. That this music is like building up to like it's Gladiator or something is happening. No, it's a basketball game, the last game of the season or something like that. And then there was another moment of music where like the girl steals a kid's headphones and they chase her through the woods. Yeah. And the music playing is like The Fugitive or something. It's like they're going to murder her when they get her. It was so intense and so, so sincere. And that's kind of what my general take on this whole movie was like. It's so sincere.
Yes.
It's so earnest. So... The other positive thing that I'll say is
there's only two.
Yeah, it's not terrible.
It's not terrible.
I when it ended, I was expecting when it ended for me to just be like garbage. Mm. It's not garbage. It's just not good. And there's a number of reasons why it wasn't good. It makes the classic storytelling blunder of just telling everything and not showing. 30 minutes in, there's this emotional, like I actually checked the timestamp. There's a scene in the driveway where the coach and his wife are having this tearful moment. They're like weeping and, you know, we need to pray about this. And I was like, is this like the climax? I mean, it felt like it was supposed to be like a climactic moment. And I paused the movie. I was like, it's 30 minutes in. And from then on, it's just scene after scene after scene of two people doing exposition with each other, explaining everything.
Yeah.
And the story kind of goes out the wayside until the end. It starts with story and it ends with story. But the middle, the whole hour, 10 minutes is like one emotional dialogue exchange after another. And it just took me right out of it. It was like, I mean, I'm rolling my eyes. I'm groaning. It was really, really bad.
I feel like for me that, I mean, maybe it's just the emotion of the scene, but the final... So Overcomer is about a young girl that's running cross country. I feel like that final scene where she does the final race. I really liked that.
I'm sure you did. I'm sure you liked the whole movie. There were a number of things that I just, the acting's not great. First of all, the director stars in the movie. He puts himself in the movie.
Yeah.
And apart from the scenes where he's got to like grimace to show that he's sad or concerned, he gets in the minivan at one point. I was like, if he cries one more time, this is ridiculous. And you can see he was like trying to work it up, but it would, you know, the tears wouldn't come, or they maybe sprinkled some of those fake tears in there. When he's not doing that, his line readings are like the flattest thing in the world, which I just thought was astounding. It sounded like he's the guy reading lines with the actor, the person that when you're auditioning, there's someone who just reads lines. So you're not really acting, you're just reading lines. That's what he sounded like. Mm. And there was this, almost as if to accentuate that, there's this subplot. It's not really even a subplot. It's this thing about kids auditioning for speeches or something. The drama teacher at the high school ropes the coach in to judge these kids who are doing these monologues. Yeah. And at first I thought, oh, they're going to tie this in somehow.
No.
And it had nothing to do with anything.
Well, they're at a school.
What it had to do with them judging these kids who were giving these monologues, and they're not good actors. And I was like, why are they doing this? And why are they having this bad actor act as a judge of these bad actors in a movie that's full of bad acting? It made...
See, here's the...
The best part of that was the final kid. His name was Truxton. And Becky looks at me and she goes, did they say Truxton? I was like, yes, the kid's name is Truxton, which is like the first flash of like, where did that come from in the whole movie?
So you've made the fatal mistake of... thinking too much. So the best part of Christian movies is just enjoying the nice, sweet little story.
There were too many plots. So you have it starts off, well, what I think it's about is the basketball team doesn't win the championship.
It does not.
Yeah, they miss, this is at the very beginning, it's not a spoiler, but I'm going to spoil this thing anyway. I think it's the coach's son. Anyway, takes the game-winning shot, misses the three-pointer that would have tied it or won it. And so they lose, and then in the locker room, he's like, hey, we'll get them next year. And this, I love that. I almost laughed at this. The reason they're going to win is because the team that beat them, four of their guys are graduating. So, like, it's not even going to be the same team, and our guys are coming back. So, you know, they're losing their best guys. That's how we're going to win, not because we're better, because their good guys are going to be gone. So we're going to win. And then I was like, oh, it's going to be about the basketball team overcoming, and the next, and that was, you know, helped by the very next scene, sort of, is the news that there's a company that's shutting down in the town, and so a lot of families are leaving, they're moving away, so the best basketball players are moving away from their own team, and so the coach is like, I don't even know if I'm going to have a basketball team. I was like, oh, so now it's going to be about taking some scrubs onto the basketball team or winning with your, you know, leftover players. No, the basketball team really had nothing to do with the thing other than that he was a basketball coach.
Yeah.
So then he gets thrown in. He's going to coach cross country because the cross country coach and those players are all gone. which if you don't have players and you don't have a coach, maybe you don't have cross country. That was confusing to me.
But then there was somebody that wanted to run.
There was one person, and it's this girl. So here comes the second little plot is, or actually the third. The second is that you're going to be the basketball coach who coaches cross country, and which is, I thought, oh, I've seen this kind of thing before. Yeah. It's like the Ted Lasso thing, the guy who goes to go coach soccer, and even though he's a football coach, right? But it's not really about that. It's about that. But then it's like there's this little girl, and she's a wayward, troubled soul. How do you know that? Well, she doesn't talk a lot, and she steals things. And I wanted more from this girl. She was really cute.
Yep.
So she was like, she's got a great look about her, like, but very flat line reading. Like, in that role, you want some precociousness. You want some.
Yeah, she was trying to.
She was a very shy, kind of mousy girl.
She was meant to be like a Sully teenager, which.
Yeah, I didn't get that at all.
I don't think it came
through.
No,
she wasn't gruff or like. No. They were trying to, like, she's a kid from the wrong kind of side of the tracks. So she's like a thug kind of kid that needs to be reformed. She didn't have any thuggishness at all about her.
But she does get reformed.
She does get reformed. She goes from shy to being
not shy.
A Christian influencer at the end. She's had a Bible study, and she's like, you know, Sadie Robertson there with her. She's even dresses like, you know, one of the, like, the white girl Christian influencers at the end. I'm like, okay, here we go. Anyway, I'm jumping ahead.
Yeah.
So there's a third. Yeah, that's the third subplot is like, oh, there's this girl, and she's going to run cross country. She has asthma. That's another thing that's against her as well.
Poor kid.
At the same time, then they introduce a fourth subplot, and some of these come together to their credit, but I'm like, this is a lot. They're juggling a lot here, which is the coach goes with the pastor to visit someone in the hospital, and the guy who played the pastor, not a great actor, but he has to be a real pastor. I wonder if he's their pastor or one of their pastors. Because he came across as like a real dude.
Yeah.
I'm like, I think that guy's probably a pastor. And they're probably like, let's get Pastor John in here to play Pastor Joe or something, you know. So he comes in. If he is an actor, I feel really bad now that I just criticize him. But or maybe I'm not, because he's authentic as a pastor. Maybe he did it actually well.
Maybe he did very well. We're taking a break from our episode today to let you know about the upcoming Nine Marks at Midwestern Conference happening on April 16th and 17th on the Midwestern Seminary campus.
As a listener of the For the Church podcast, you get 50% off your conference tickets. Just enter code FTC9MARKS when you register to apply your discount. Check out the show notes for links to register. I'll be speaking at the conference along with several other ministry leaders across the country, so I hope to see you in Kansas City for the conference soon. Anyway, so the coach ends up accidentally walking into the next door room where there's a guy, a blind guy, who's dying from diabetes. And he strikes up a friendship with this guy. I'm going to say, and I'm actually going to look up this guy's name, out of everyone in this whole movie, and it wasn't a high bar at all, but that guy, his name is Cameron Arnett.
Yeah.
He's a really good actor.
Yeah, he is.
He plays Thomas Hill, the blind diabetes guy. I was like, this guy's got some cred. I looked him up on IMDb and I started scrolling through. He's got credits that go all the way back. He was in this movie called Poison Ivy, which was a TV movie with Nancy McKeon and Michael J. Fox in like 1984 or 83 or something. So like he's been in the business a while. His most recent, you know, the last 15, 20 years of all are all faith-based films. So I assume he's a believer himself, but he was a good actor.
Yeah.
So anyway, the coach stumbles into this guy's room and they strike up a friendship. Turns out that guy used to run cross country.
Yeah. Look at that.
What a coincidence. But wait, there's more. So he's helping this guy. He's coaching the coach on how to coach cross country because he doesn't know anything about cross country. And so then they kind of pause the film and there's 45 minutes to 50 minutes of emotional dialogue scenes with some crying and some let's pray about it and a lot of exposition. And Tony Evans' daughter is the principal in the movie.
Yep.
Her name is Priscilla Shire.
Shire.
Yeah, she was all right. She wasn't bad, wasn't great. It was sort of like stunt casting kind of thing, I think. She's a teacher, I suppose. She plays a principal. There was some exposition of that. When we come back around, what we discover, and I laughed out loud, I literally laughed out loud, is that the guy in the hospital is actually the little cross country girl's father.
Yep.
The long lost father. And the way they reveal this, so you already know the girl's born on Valentine's Day and she thinks her parents are dead. Her mom's dead. She thinks her dad is dead and she's living with her grandma. And she loves cross country. And then so this guy was like, I had a girl and I had to leave her behind. Her mother died. We were into some bad stuff. You know, he's got a testimony and I had to leave her with her with her mother's mother. And she was born on Valentine's Day. And I like literally erupted into laughter. And to sum it all up, Priscilla Shire's character, the principal, leads the little girl into a personal decision. She asks Jesus into her heart with the whole deal. There's a sinner's prayer scene. Repeat after me. She repeats after her. And I assume the main point of including that in the movie was so that people watching the movie could even use it as an evangelistic thing or they themselves maybe would repeat after what's happening. It's so explicitly like spelled out. And anyway, and so there's a prayer. The girl decides to become a Christian and she goes from 34th in the cross country races to winning the last race.
Because you can't have her losing in a Christian movie, can you?
Because you can't have a Christian lose at the end of the movie. Yeah. And then they very helpfully put up the Bible verse at the end that we will overcome the world. And I was like, that's exactly what that means.
That's exactly what it
means. If we're Christians. When I was a kid, I had a poster on my wall of a guy dunking a basketball and it had Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And this is the movie version of that poster, which is if you just believe hard enough, if you're a good enough Christian, if you stop stealing things, you too can get first place the cross country race. So, like I said, not terrible, but about what I expected.
Yep. You've got to admit one thing.
Okay.
It gives a nice warm fuzzy feeling.
No, it did not. I was glad when it was over. I thought I got to cleanse my palate somehow.
So then we have to switch to my choice.
Let's switch to your choice.
Because you have hammered. So my can I just say, at least I gave you a film in the modern era.
Okay. This is the modern era. What are you talking about? 1987, I think.
I wasn't even born. Like, you gave me a film before I was born. About,
this is like BR and AR before Ross and after Ross and the year of Ross.
So the choice Jared gave me was Babette's Feast. Even the name made me think, oh, here we go. So Babette's Feast
tell me all about it.
A 1987 film based on a story written in the 1950s.
Oh, my word. So ancient. Ancient Greece.
Well, I'm going to point out, number one, the film was made before I was born. Okay. Number two, the story was written before my mother was born. So we're talking about a storyline that's old, okay? It did actually win an Oscar.
It did.
For the best foreign language film, which I thought was really funny because it's a foreign language film.
It's in Danish.
It's in Danish. Jared got me to watch a film with subtitles. And just to be clear, I have never watched a film in its entirety with subtitles.
Oh, really?
Because I cannot stand subtitles.
Okay, but there's not a lot of dialogue in the movie.
No, and that's going to be one of my points.
Okay.
So the film is about... I mean, I'm just going to say I hate the film.
There's
multiple reasons. Okay. The film is basically some really conservative Christians living on a clifftop next to the sea.
You got to set the scene. So it's the 1800s.
No. Okay. Let's not set the scene yet because this is my time to ridicule.
All right, all right. I'm just trying to. People are picturing Christians on a clifftop. They may be thinking in 1987.
Okay, I'll tell you that. It's the 1800s. Okay. It's a long time ago.
Yeah.
And it's a story basically about two sisters and their dad, who is a minister of a local, I would go as far to say cult. He is a cult leader. Like, people love him.
We would say sect. But sect, sure, yeah, okay. It's a Protestant sect.
He is loved more than Jesus, I think would be fair to say.
Yes. They're very legalistic.
They have a picture of him on the wall. Mm. He has raised his two daughters to love Jesus, to love God, to love the community. And the film kind of goes a little bit backwards and forwards. The kind of two sisters, when they were younger, have men that are interested in them, but nothing really ever happens. And so then it switches to them later in life. They're much older, still living together, but their dad has died. And so they're continuing this sect in their father's honor. And it is basically a story about redemption, ultimately, about this group of people that were going to, quote, church every week, who were falling out with each other and who were miserable, and how that changed for them. And it changed because Babette entered the story.
And her feast.
Babette is a French refugee who comes to them through a kind of, I think, a slightly awkward way for in the film. And they host her, and she is their maid. The two sisters have her as a maid. And Babette is foreign. She's from France, and she brings different thoughts and different things. And there, it comes to the 100th birthday of the dad of these two sisters. And when they said 100th, it's the year of his 100th, it's his 100th year. I was thinking, is he alive still? Oh no, we're celebrating his 100th birthday, even though he's dead. Yeah. And Babette offers to make a meal for the church, but it's a French meal, a Parisian meal. And clearly it's going to be very different than what they expect. But how is she going to achieve this?
That's good.
Yeah. How is she actually going to be able to do a huge feast for this church? You need to mention
that she's worked for free for 14 years.
Yeah, she worked for free. There's no money. That you're trying to make it better. It's just not better.
It does make it better.
How does Babette make a massive feast? Well, she wins the lottery.
Yes.
And a friend of hers back in France has won, you know, been doing the lottery for her. And 10,000 francs come in. And she's able to buy all this high-end food, turtles for turtle soup, you know, the best wines, the best champagne.
She sends away to France for all this stuff.
Gets it all in from France. And essentially, it all culminates in one large scene towards the end, which is this kind of big feast. One of the suitors that were there in the younger days, he comes back as he's been a general in the Swedish army, and he's back. And you kind of get, there's a little bit behind the scenes. He's kind of a guy that knows good food. And it turns out towards the end that Babette's actually a famous chef. And she releases this information to the two sisters that this is what that she did. And she wants to live with them for the rest of her life. And she has taken all of her lottery winnings and put it on this one big meal. So that's the storyline.
No, but I mean, what does the meal do for those who are at the table? That's the important part. You've got this sect who are so austere.
Yes.
And they're at odds with each other.
Yeah, they promise that they'll say nothing about the meal because they're so scared about the stuff.
They think it's too sumptuous.
Princess Bride-esque scene, there's a scary, scary dream of turtles scaring people in a devilish type way. And so the sisters make everyone promise not to say anything about the food, and everyone's just going to eat it, and they're going to essentially seek forgiveness afterwards because this seems like devil's food.
It's too indulgent, yeah, it's too exactly. opulent. Yeah.
And basically through the meal, they start from being very harsh, and then they end the meal loving the meal, loving each other, almost forgiving each other for all past wrongs. Jack's like nodding his head. The most obvious redemption story.
Oh my word,
imagine.
The most obvious. Give me a break.
It was so, the second you knew she was cooking the meal, you knew they were going to love it. You just knew that this was all going to go amazing. And you knew that she was the chef as soon as.
Well, maybe they should have had a cross country race at the end.
It was so obvious.
I bet could win.
Here's a few things though that I just tanked the thing for me.
Okay.
Number one, there's a lot of looking and there's a lot of singing. There is not a lot of dialogue. Okay. There are so many scenes where everyone just looks at each other. Mm. And that's all that happens. They just look.
Like, I mean,
it's not a man interested in a woman. They just look. The meal comes out.
It is a little Danish art film.
They just look. That's all they do is they just look at each other. Several times through the film, I just looked at Mary and went, they're looking again. Because they don't talk. No one shares anything. And when they do talk, it's in subtitles. So that bugs me. So there's a lot of looking. There is a lot of church and a lot of church singing, but really bad church and really bad singing.
You think that was kind of the point, maybe?
It is kind of the point.
Okay.
But this is going to build to my twist at the end here.
Okay.
In fact, I'll bring the twist now. I don't think this is a Christian movie.
Oh, okay.
I think this is a romantic movie.
Oh, interesting.
I think
romantic
this,
between who?
I think it's the fact that the two sisters never marry. I think it's the fact that the general comes back and the best line is, I will eat with you every night. And you think, it's finally happening. She's finally going to get married. And he goes, but not in the flesh, only in the spirit.
Mm.
And you're sitting there going, so you love her and you're not going to actually be with her. It's a romantic movie. So I don't think it's a Christian movie because it actually doesn't elevate Christ. It doesn't elevate the gospel.
So it's not explicit. In your mind, there has to be an explicit message of the gospel.
Because it's not, you have to know scripture to know that this is a redemption story, that it's about the feast that will bring people together, the feast in the that Christ provides in the eternal realms, and it's the now but not yet situation. You have to know that. Otherwise, this is just romance that never happens and kind of arty, romantic, how food brings people together.
Okay. Well,
so at 15 minutes, I paused it and I thought, there is an hour and 15 minutes left. At 45 minutes, I paused it. Mm-hmm. And I looked at Miriam and went, all they are doing is looking at each other. Something needs to happen. Now, there was, to be fair, a couple of really funny scenes. The dream scene was, I found, quite funny. And there was also some kind of like emotional scenes as well. I think the meal at the end is the best thing about the movie. And
everything's building up to that.
Yeah, unlike Overcomer, it builds up to it. But the second they start the meal, you know how it's going to end. And the meal starts with still like 40 minutes of the movie left. So for the rest of the movie, you know exactly what's going to happen. And here's the thing. I think Christian movies, you do know. Like Overcomer, you knew. But at least in Overcomer, you feel warm and fuzzy at the end.
But I didn't.
At the end of Babette's Feast, the things that, this is what I said to myself. I thought, one, I've watched a movie before I was born. Two, I've watched something that was written before my mother was born. Three, I've watched something that has subtitles. Four, I watched something that I'm not sure is a Christian movie. And five, I watched a movie about looking at each other. That's kind of what I felt at the end.
Well, if you're not a caveman like Ross...
I thought when we were watching, Miriam's words were, I reckon...
Did she like the movie?
Well, she... No, this was her...
Oh, that's fine.
I'm gonna drop her in this.
Okay.
She said, I think Jared would like this movie because it's like the artist that is struggling through and enjoying the fact that other people enjoy their work. So the chef wants to make this food.
I will say, if you're a foodie, so Becky loved it because there are just these
loads
long,
of
sumptuous
food.
Scenes of the preparation of the meal. For those who are really into food and unique food, and like if you watch all those cooking shows and everything, and you want to see sort of an artistic rendering of somebody very carefully creating a sumptuous French cuisine.
Miriam didn't
meal,
like it. There's a lot of animal heads being chopped off.
Yeah, you see from the very beginning the preparation from the raw ingredients to the end of this.
A turtle appears.
Let me just say, the Christian movie aspect of it, like I put that on there. The movie's not marketed as a Christian movie. It wasn't produced by a Christian production company, or it wasn't. I mean, it's 1987. It, like, that didn't really exist except maybe in some sort of off-market type things. I mean, there were Christian movies, but not like today where it's a cottage industry. That's not what it was. But it has the redemptive themes to it. There is sort of – Babette is kind of a Christ figure, so she has – this hidden identity in that she's this great French chef, but she's come
it's
as
not
a,
that hidden.
As a poor maid. Yeah. Well, but it okay, but you just said it was, because if you don't know scripture, you wouldn't know what was happening.
I'm saying the fact that she was the chef is not that hidden.
Oh.
That's fairly obvious.
Oh, yeah, but I mean that she was a
like
a legit French chef.
Yeah. Her aim was redemption, that you could see that her aim
and
was to bring people together.
And what you see is the facade of this sort of austere... You know, the equation of their religion with a kind of legalistic, what we might even call puritanical, but just the way people perceive Reformed Protestantism begins to melt with she provides this, with everything she has. She spends everything she has to provide this meal, and it's the feast of herself, essentially, and it melts the hearts, and they experience unity and joy and all these sorts of things. So, yeah, I mean— that part is, I guess, quote unquote, obvious.
Yeah.
But it's not an explicitly Christian movie, so there's not a
and that's my twist
gospel
in this.
Presentation
this is
in it
a
or anything.
Grab bag of Christian movie swap, and I honored that, and I don't think Jared did. I think I think you have given me a secular film that
my
has
word.
Christian overtones.
So I need to find, well, that, like, I'd have to find
a Christian.
It doesn't exist.
A Christian
movie that's good.
A Christian produced with a Christian message.
Well, if we do it again.
I don't know if I'm going to do this.
If we do it again, we'll have to change the parameters.
The one thing I would say in watching this, though, and this is the second film you've actually got me to watch that I wouldn't normally watch. You convinced me to watch It's a Wonderful Life, and I had never watched that before. And this is the second movie. And one of the things I would say is, I would never have watched this unless we were doing this. And yes, I wasn't a massive fan of it, but putting it politely. But one of the things that it made me realize is how stuck we can get in our own way of doing things. Hmm. Like, there's just no way I would have watched this. And I don't think there was any way you were going to watch Overcomer unless we did
this. That's true.
And there's just that sense of, I think sometimes we need friends to say, I don't think you should just watch the things you always watch. I think you should.
Yeah, we got out of our comfort zones.
Push the horizon a little bit and see something. So I appreciated the experience of being able to not just watch the films that I always like to watch. And as films go, it's not the worst I've ever seen.
Okay. Yeah. The Oscar winner for best foreign language film, 1987, is not the worst film you've ever seen. Okay.
Well, I was laughing with an international student last night, and I was saying it won the best foreign language film. Do you know that around the world, they're not foreign languages, they're just the languages of the country?
Well, it's the Academy.
It's like
American.
The Academy was like, oh, there's films around the world. Let's give them a prize. So yeah. If this was made in America and it was an American movie, it would not have won an Oscar.
Well, I don't know about that. Maybe. You know, this year there were two foreign films, foreign to the Academy, yep, which is an American motion picture, that were nominated in Best Foreign Language and in Best Picture. Mm. So that, it's kind of rare. But anyway.
So
there'll be a third one that you haven't seen that you probably would not have seen if it weren't for me coming up, assuming you attend the last class session for the Writing for the Church. Because I learned on the first or second day of class that none of the students have seen Casablanca.
Nope.
Which I don't know if you're going to love it, but it's certainly...
So far.
There's plot, there's dialogue, there's action.
Okay.
I mean, not action like Indiana Jones action, but it moves. I think you're going to like it more than... It'll be closer to It's a Wonderful Life for you than this. Yeah. But Casablanca is the greatest film ever made. So, if you don't like it, we may be done with this whole podcast. We're going to watch it on the last class period.
Yeah. I feel like I would have enjoyed Babette's Feast more if it wasn't in a foreign language.
Interesting.
And I actually read that they were thinking, I think a year or two, they were thinking about Americanizing this. And there's a discussion about doing it in an American version.
There's a Raymond Carver short story that's very similar, and I don't remember the name of it, but it's about a couple that's grieving the loss of their child, and a fellow cooks them a lunch. It's not a feast like Babette's Feast or anything, but it's the theme is something about just like feeding the healing power of food or something like that.
I think one of the things that you can watch any film and ultimately see some form of Christian message in there. I think these two films are fairly obvious as to what they're trying to get to. And I think Overcomer, there is the power of good thinking. And I don't mean that in a, like, you should go and think good thoughts and everything's going to go well. But I think there is this, sometimes you can be defeated by your situation, and actually we need to stop letting that happen. You don't need to be a victim. You can choose to not be a victim. And I think in Babette's Feast, it's you don't need to be the person that complains. You can be the person that helps others love each other. And I think in both movies, there is that question of who are you? Like, what are you doing with your life? How are you thinking? And both, I think, get to that.
That reminds me of the two big long speeches about identity and Overcomer. Who are you? You know, identity. And then just get a little sermon from the
nice Ephesians.
The guy dying from diabetes.
Yeah.
Hey, this is a fun episode. Even though neither one of us liked the movie.
Fun episode.
It was fun.
Not so fun evening before.
No, you're right. Maybe if we give some more lead time, maybe if we're like, hey, in 2 months we're gonna do this. You got 2 months to watch whatever this thing is. Maybe we'll do it eventually, or we'll just go back to the two questions format. If you enjoy the podcast, your listener, give us a good review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And until next time, may Jesus be big in your church.
You've been listening to the For the Church podcast, hosted by Jared Wilson, found online at ftc.co.
This resource is brought to you by Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Kansas City, Missouri, where we train leaders for the church.